we're actually doing this a second time. We're giving it another try because the first time we had some background noise and it made, you know, hearing us difficult. So thank you for being understanding and doing this a second time. The reason you're here is because I was talking with Andres, with whom I recently recorded a conversation about how it was important not to fall into the tribal mindset in the vegan community. And I asked him, you know, do you know other independent-minded vegans who are outspoken about their veganism? And you came up in that conversation, and I thought, yes, I will platform them. I want to amplify their voices. I want to, you know, have more of that in the vegan community. So thank you for being here.
Well, thanks for having me on again. Well, hopefully this time there's no problems with the noise.
One way I introduce people to the podcast is by asking them, you know, who is your vegan hero? And I was thinking of maybe asking you this question as a way of introducing yourself. So, Rebecca, who is your vegan hero?
Well, one woman who comes to mind, Connie. Like in the earlier days, she was referred to as the vegan Batgirl, but then now she calls herself on Instagram the vegan lobbyist. You know, and I know last time we were talking about like all this like corruption in the food system. Like she actually, to my understanding, she lives in Washington, D.C. and does actually meet with like lobbyists and people with all the, you know, she knows so much about like all the farm system reforms and all these bills that are trying to get passed. So I think if you really want to know like the ins and out, you might want to try and get her on.
That sounds...
And I'm like, wow. You know, because I think, right? Because activism can only really get us so far in a way. Because, I mean, hypothetically, if we all decided to go vegan tomorrow, there'd still be all these, you know, laws and regulations in place, especially with subsidies. For instance, I don't know how Canada is. I'm pretty sure it's fairly similar, but meat, dairy, and eggs gets like a huge cut from the government. But then it's something only about, 11% goes to fruits, vegetables, and grains. So, I mean, there's just so much within our food system. Like, I mean, I'm trying to learn about it, but it's kind of hard. So, to me, yeah, you are kind of my hero for learning all of that and then actually like getting your foot in the door on like Washington.
That person sounds very intriguing, and yes, I would definitely want to get her on the show. And is she present on social media?
Well, her Instagram is the vegan lobbyist.
Great.
I mean, I can DM you like later.
Yes, I will add the link in the episode notes so listeners can find her, can look her up. Okay, so we decided on talking about the criticism we often receive as vegans. And what I did in preparation for this episode is just open Copilot, the AI, the Microsoft AI that no one uses, and ask Copilot, basically, give me a list of all the criticism that vegans receive. And I got more than 30 points of criticism. And I was thinking to go through some of the points in that list. And the classic one is, of course, nutritional deficiencies. Now, you know,
well, what about them exactly?
Critics claim that the vegan diet can lead to deficiencies in essential nutrients like protein, vitamin B12, iron, and calcium.
Calcium.
I mean, definitely, but that's the case for every diet. Plenty of non-vegans have nutritional deficiencies. And I think that actually vegans are more aware of that because we make them aware of that because of that constant criticism, and are more educated about their nutrition and the way they plan their diet than non-vegans. But what do you make of that criticism?
Well, I'm sure there is some truth to it, but, you know, it's, you know, even outside of veganism, you have to, right? Even just like some common sense things, like you have to eat like more fruits and vegetables, get a variety in your diet. I mean, the one supplement you do have to very much take is B12. But then, of course, the argument is, oh, well, if you have to take B12, then, you know, then it's faulty. But the reality is that, at least here in the US, lots of our livestock are injected with B12. It's the same thing as drinking fortified milk. Because I think, yeah, there's such thing as a vitamin D milk that people drink all the time. So
definitely. I think I would reference a natural vegan, and because, you know, she's very on point and critical everything that has to do with nutrition. She's not a nutritionist. She's not a certified dietitian. And I think she studied philosophy. But she has critical thinking, and she uses that critical thinking superpower on every wacky trend that is present in the vegan movement, starting with raw veganism. And yeah, I would definitely recommend her content to get a better understanding of, you know, how to plan for your vegan diet.
I mean, definitely, there's a lot of information out there. I know there's a, what is it, Challenge 22 for people when they do Veganuary. You've heard about that one, right? The Challenge 22?
Yes,
I think so. And then there's even just apps these days. How do you say it? Is it, everyone debates, is it Chronometer or Chronometer? I don't know. There's debate on how to pronounce that one. But right, you just punch in, you know, the serving amount, what you ate, and it shows you just, right, the amount of calories, fat, and all the vitamins and nutrients. So it's, you can track yourself that way if you feel like something's missing. I mean, I don't do it like every day, but, you know, if I'm feeling like, maybe I'm not being healthy, you know, I'll just kind of punch it in. And then I'm like, oh, okay, I need to probably eat more of this or that, maybe calm down on, you know, some of these other things.
And I have to also name Yuka. I talked about it.
This app is ruining my life.
Oh, no.
No, I, because, right, like, I actually, like, went through my fridge and scanned a lot of those things. And I'm like, holy crap. There's a, well, let's just say a very well-known common brand of soy milk has what, like, calcium phosphate. And then the other, like, minor thing that I didn't know about is that a lot of plant milks actually have dye in them. It's like, wait, they're not, I don't know. That doesn't make any sense to me for like a milk to have dye, because it's like white or off-white, but apparently that's dye.
Well,
like maybe if it's like too white or something, then maybe like, but yeah, that was so crazy. But go ahead. What were you saying?
I was just saying, you know, I'm laughing, but I'm not, you know, I
know,
I'm
really
compassionate. You know, I had that experience. That's why I'm laughing. I went through what you went through, the scanning everything in the fridge with the Yuka app and discovering that you are eating crap.
It is, because, I mean, I don't know how exactly this became a narrative, but a lot of people, like a big criticism that people say now is like, oh, well, vegans are just always eating Beyond Burgers and things. And it's like, you know, a few years ago it was kind of like, okay, yeah, we never admitted that it was healthy, but now you have like all these memes and things about all like the ingredients, and then, you know, the beef is just one ingredient, and it's like, no, there's a lot of stuff that they're giving livestock. It's just as bad in a way, but it's also true. And I think a lot of vegans are kind of in denial about it. Because I mean, I 100% get the ethical argument, right? If I'm out at a restaurant or something, and the only thing I can get is a, Beyond Burger, then yes, I'm going to eat that. But it's not like I'm buying that regularly all the time, especially now after this app. I'm like, holy, no, my fridge is starting to look a little bit like Fully Raw Christina. I'm like, holy crap.
That's the Yuka app effect, and I recommend it, to listeners. Truly, I love hearing those stories. Okay, let's go to another criticism point: the economic cost. Okay, there is a perception that the vegan lifestyle is more expensive due to the cost of specialty products and organic produce. I like that it says a perception that a vegan lifestyle, it's not fact that, it costs more. But of course, if you're starting in your vegan journey and you miss the taste of animal products and you want to replicate that, well, it will cost a lot to purchase all of the mock meat products. And I don't know if it's international, like if it's also the case in the US, but at least here in Canada, for like six Beyond Meat burger patties, you have to pay at least like $25. Yes.
Oh, wait, see, damn. Like, I was about to say, like, last time I checked, it was, gosh, it was about maybe at least the sausage ones I saw, it was about six of them for about like nine, $10. But 20, what they do and out in Canada?
Well,
No way, no way.
I'm telling you, prices went, up, up, up
I
in
thought our
Canada.
inflation was bad. Holy
No,
crap.
it is. It
Oh,
really is.
well, one thing that's really expensive here right now is strawberries. Like one little thing of strawberries is like $9.
That's a regular Canadian price.
Oh my God, I would starve to death in Canada.
Anyway, so yes, it costs a lot to get those special products, but I guess it's cheaper to just, purchase the lentils and the beans and
I mean, I definitely like my lentils, and then I feel like most stores, at least in America, like even the store that I go to, will have like a discount bananas. And right, you'll get a bunch of bananas for what, like 65 cents. Like you can do that. Like you can find places that have, discount prices. They may not be like organic, obviously, but I don't know. But yeah, like if you stick to mainly just vegetables, not too many like exotic fruits and berries can be kind of pricey, but just like generic vegetables, beans, lentils, rice, like that stuff actually is not expensive at all. Outside of the West is actually that like meat is a luxury and that's expensive.
well, let me share this story. I come from North Africa, and
Okay.
in my native country, they've had some major economic difficulties. So they stopped subsidizing meat, and now nobody can afford meat in my native country.
Oh, wow.
It's now considered a luxury product there. And it's fascinating to see how, it's one thing to hear vegan activists talk about it and, how much the government is tipping the scale, but it's another to see it being concretized and the effects when the subsidizing disappear.
Yeah, I know, right? Like it's actually crazy how much like the excuse me, the subsidies, really make things like cheap for people. Like the second you take it away, it's like bam, it's like five times the price.
And lots of Canadian products, well, animal products made in Canada are subsidized. And, it's a small crowd, the farmers, the animal farmers, they compose like a small group, and they have lots of bargaining power with the government because they're very united and very efficient in mobilizing their resources to put pressure in the government, such as through lobbyists. So yes, they're a powerful group, and they do take lots of our taxpayer money as subsidies. I was reading Dr. Crystal Heath, and she was reacting to someone saying, "Oh, I'm so happy to be vegan because I'm not contributing to the exploitation of animals." And she just commented, "You are still contributing to the
Completely tolerant.
exploitation of, sorry."
Well, I'm just saying, like we like you were just saying, it's tax dollars. We all
Exactly.
pay taxes. Like every time we swipe our credit card somewhere, some small percentage of that is floating out into, going into subsidies.
Yes, going to
You know,
the.
and that's what I was saying earlier, with Connie, right? Like hypothetically, if we all went vegan, our tax dollars would still be funding this. And that's why I'm like, holy crap, she actually learned all about these, food lobbying bills, like got her foot in the door and actually works with some of these people now.
Well, the way I'm thinking about it is still good to gain more people to the vegan cause because we want to show those politicians that there is a large constituency of voters that don't agree with that practice and want to see animals being liberated from exploitation. And that's also why I advocated for reaching out to more conservatives, because if you're a conservative politician, why should you care about this issue? If the people who are voting for you don't care about this issue, then why should you? If all the vegans out there are on the left and, they will never vote for someone on the right, then, it's done. The politicians on the right will never try to seduce or charm that voting bloc. And so you're just giving away your power to some politicians.
Well, I mean, to be perfectly fair, like both sides, like they're all like politicians are politicians. They make empty promises. It doesn't matter which side of the aisle you're on, right? And I know at the end of the day, it really is kind of just all about money. So, I mean, it's like neither Republican or Democrat politicians actually really care. Like, let's get real here.
Well, my real
But getting
question,
them to care, I guess, is kind of the point.
here's my real question. What about the ones we elected and who are vegan, who have that power, who do believe the same things we do? Why are they not doing more for animals? That's what I'm wondering. I know that if I was elected to a political position, I would do everything in my power to help animals. And that was the case of David Michel, who was a past guest of the show, was elected as a congressman. He's a vegan, and he got so much shit for all the activism he did as a politician for animals. But I would have done the same, you know, and I'm just wondering, you know, the Cory Bucher, I think,
Oh, but Cory Booker, yeah.
Booker of this world, who are vegan. What about them? And more than that, what about the liberal politicians who must have family members and friends and past colleagues or whatever who are vegans? Like, what are those friends and family members doing? You know, shouldn't they be, you know, trying to exploit their link with.
I mean, I completely agree with you and feel you on that one. It's like, why aren't you doing more? But gosh, I mean, I'm not like a politician or anything, but I think there is just a lot of, you know, kind of like bureaucracy and red tape. Like it actually does take a lot behind the scenes to get like bills and laws changed. Like I'm aware of that, but I think at the end of the day, like a lot of it does have to do with money. And if it's not gonna like financially benefit them in some way, then they're not gonna really make it happen.
Okay, are we ready to go to another point?
Yeah, sure.
Family dynamics. Some claim that being vegan can cause friction with families, especially if only one member follows the diet. That one is a killer. Yes.
Oh, yeah, I was about to say, oof, my experience kind of was a bit rocky. You know, I ultimately, you know, I actually did take the Liberation Pledge. And I know some people might come for me for saying this, but the liberation, like, you know what the Liberation Pledge is, right?
I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. So the Liberation Pledge is when you like publicly refuse to like eat and like sit with people who are like eating meat and dairy, like essentially. So a lot of people are like, oh, it's a form of activism. And I'm like, not really. The Liberation Pledge is more like a, I see it as kind of like a self-preservation and like a boundary. Because sometimes, like, I mean, it's difficult. Like, sometimes people are just really stubborn. They will not change. And then they kind of do all this really like annoying behavior that's like disrespectful. And I'm like, you know what? You need to kind of stop putting yourself in situations that you know are going to be terrible and not end well. So I think it is like a self-preservation thing. Like if people have shown you that, you know, they can't be respectful around you, especially, you know, at meal times or family events, then you kind of just have to walk away. And that's how I kind of see the Liberation Pledge. I know a lot of people are going to come for me on that one, but truth be told, it's really just a preservation and like boundary. You know, but gosh, it and like, because I think one of the hardest things, especially when you're a new vegan, is realizing that a lot of people are actually kind of like just brainwashed or entitled. It's like really. There's peer-reviewed studies, then there's the slaughterhouse footage, and then you're still gonna like fight it. It's like really the people that I used to think were really kind and intelligent are really, you know, giving me all this BS about veganism. Like, what happened? Like, they're kind of like not who you thought they were.
Well, when I started this podcast, I was asking every guest, you know, why do you think we became vegan? And I gone from asking so many people about their vegan journey that it's not really our decision in a way, that it just happens that we have the right personality and we came across the right message at the right time, and that triggered something in us that made us want to become vegan. And that's why, in a way, yes, it's good to become vegan, but and people should. But at the same time, I don't feel like I made the decision to be vegan, like from like free will perspective, that it just so happens that, in a the circumstances made it so that I became vegan. And I try to, look at other people the same way. I don't want to blame them for not being vegan. I just want to look at their conditioning and think, is it really their decision? Are they really the ones making the decision not to go vegan? Or is it just that they haven't been, exposed to the right conditions to take that path? Yeah, kind of complicated, but I guess I would refer to philosophers like Sam Harris, who don't believe in free will, who believe in that we are all determined by our circumstances, and that determinism is the way to truly understand the way we behave and act. And I really subscribe to that. I'm less of a free will person and more of a, deterministic.
I would have to actually kind of look into that, but I mean, I know like a lot of people like they think they're making up their mind, but a lot of I guess like subconscious things are actually what's really driving our behavior. So, but what you said to me about how vegans have a kind of just right personality, like to me that stands out because I mean, not to like brag or anything too much, but when I did, when I was confronted with, slaughterhouse footage and, the fact that, oh yeah, you can actually be healthy, you can live without this. Like I didn't really put up much of a fight. I'm just like, holy crap, I have to go vegan. As you were saying, it's almost like not a decision. It's like, no, that's like something is just like wrong with you, I think. Like if you keep fighting that. But I guess a lot of people do have that. So do we have a type of personality? I guess. I mean, I think that is kind of a interesting thing to think about.
Well, yeah, I don't want to, create an existential crisis here, and but I really do believe that at the end, if you're blaming Big Ag for, their ads, the type of ads they put out, and the way they influence the government to produce things like dietary guides. If you blame them for that, then you understand that people are influenceable, that people are the results of certain triggers that you put in front of them. That's why ads are so effective. They are basically manipulations to make you purchase something. That's why algorithms, on social media are also that effective. So at the end, is it really people's fault and decision not to go vegan, or is it just the long addition of, ads and culture and all of that anti-vegan, pro-carnist messaging that makes them, think that they're making that decision of not going vegan or rejecting veganism? I'm not a philosopher, so I'm not sure how much I'm well describing this, but yeah, that's I think I'm getting to the core of it.
I mean, I definitely see that there is a lot of, I guess like brainwashing and manipulation. So I don't know. And I guess when everything, right, like when something has been so like normalized to you, and then someone, like a vegan comes out of nowhere and being like, hey, you're being lied to, they immediately, I guess, want to blame you and not themselves. Because they don't want to like face up to the fact that they have been, kind of brainwashed and manipulative because everyone wants to, act like they're the smartest person in the room or whatever. So I think I get what you're trying to say. And then they're right, like, and then yes, like I think there definitely is an aspect of, like our subconscious or whatever you would call it that does drive our actions. And I think it is kind of our job, no matter how unpleasant it is, to be like, hey, wake up, you're being brainwashed.
Yeah, I think the first time I started thinking about this was from hearing a evolutionary psychologist say that most people on death row had a brain concussion when they were young. And then you think, okay, are they there because they're evil people? Or is it just because when they were young, they had brain trauma and that affected their abilities to, control their impulses, their violent impulses. And I guess that made me think, are people really evil and not caring for animals? Or is it just that, they have a form of mental trauma
I mean,
that.
like that could be it too. That actually kind of makes sense. I didn't know that. So like most death row people have like some sort of like brain trauma history.
That's what he said. I mean, I did not verify if it was true, but it made me start thinking, maybe the way we think about them as, it's your fault and we should punish you. Maybe it's the wrong way. Maybe those people, if they really had a choice, they would not have made that very bad choice. That's the rationale behind it. Sorry, dude. I know you're not
No,
expecting
I mean,
to get
what
into
I'm
that.
actually randomly thinking about right now is, did you ever see the TV show The Bates Motel?
Yes, with who is that actor? He did a doctor at some point who was autistic. In another TV series, but yes, I know what you're talking about. The
Okay,
Netflix TV series.
because yeah, in that show, it's not like if anything, he's like this really sweet kid, but then he because of like trauma, and then he gets like the blackouts, and then he just doesn't know what he's doing. So you're kind of thinking something like that is maybe going on.
Yes, or.
I mean, not to that extreme, obviously, but. It's not
Exactly.
like every meat eater out there is like on death row or anything, or like a psycho.
No, and I also think that in adults there is a childish part of us, and that we are,
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
yes, always carrying a child in us, and that child, is sometimes making the decisions for us. And we're not the grown-ups anymore. We let the child to take that place and make those, and then we regret those decisions, and that's part of growing up and maturing. Yeah, something like that.
I mean, I think I get what you're trying to say. Like, there is a whole, like, there's so many layers to this. Like, and, some parts of our brain that we just, like, simply don't understand or haven't even really, like, discovered or really, I guess, know enough to really articulate yet. But yeah, that is, I've never actually heard anyone bring that up before.
Well, I
So
never.
that one's definitely new to me. Like, that one, I don't have much of a opinion or say, really.
Well, I never expressed that, so that's the first time I'm talking about it. But I really do see things like that. Yeah. We can go to a new point.
All right.
Oh, another tough one. The animal testing paradox. There's an argument that some vegans overlook the use of animal-tested medications and products. Oof, yes. I do believe that the vast majority of animal testing is bad and should not be done, even in the medical space. Only talking about cosmetics. But then let me share with you a conversation I recently had with my veterinarian. We were talking about my old cat, and I don't know why, but he brought up a new treatment that they were doing to, I think, people with cancer. And he was talking about how they would take some of the blood from a patient who has cancer, and then I think inject that in rabbits. And then the cells that develop an immunity against that cancer are then extracted from that rabbit and then injected in the person, something like that. I'm sure I'm not, describing things accurately, but
Like a blood transfusion mix or something.
something like that. Like they wanted basically to trigger the creation of a good kind of cells in the rabbit, and then take those cells and put them in the patients, like put them back in the patients. And he talked about how efficient that treatment was, and how it was good for treating cancer. And then you think, oh gosh, what if it happens to someone I care about, and that's the only viable thing they have on the table, as a possible treatment? Like, what kind of decision you would have to make?
I mean, I think I'm of the opinion that if you really do need medication or some sort of life-saving thing, then, we don't live in a perfect vegan world. Like, please do what you have to do to like stay alive, obviously. But as far as kind of, I don't know, like general products, like lotions, soap, makeup, like there's no excuse for that. Right, and there's so many like products out there that are vegan now, like that there's no excuse.
Yes, I think I make it sound like a difficult choice, but most of us would just, would not hesitate to put the life of our loved ones before our own. So not to speak of a rabbit that you don't know. But yeah.
I mean, like it, right? Like, again, like, please take medication if you really need it. Like, don't die. Like, I think most vegans would pretty much agree that, like, if you really do need a medication, then please take it. Like, and we'll still, accept that you're vegan, obviously.
That's something I have no problem with. I would never judge a vegan for making that choice and putting their life first. It reminds me of something I heard from a natural vegan. She once said, "We're all moral monsters." Okay, next one. Sorry, that was a downer. Extremism. There's a perception that some vegans adopt an extreme and intolerant stance towards non-vegans. What do you make of that one?
Well, I think that that's, I think, nuanced. I think it really depends on what you have to pinpoint what about them is extreme. Because I mean, there are some people, like, I mean, for me, especially when I first went vegan, like, so many people would be like, oh, you're being extreme, like treat yourself once in a while or just be a vegetarian. So to me, it's like, no, having a, basic moral line of like If you don't need to kill animals in order to, live, then don't do it. I mean, some people see that as extreme, but then yeah, you would probably have to really pinpoint and be precise what exactly this supposed quote unquote extreme vegan is actually extreme about.
This
I
reminds
mean, do
me,
you,
yes.
oh, I, sorry, I was going to ask if like if you have like a particular example or were you just about to say that?
Yes, I was about to give an example.
Oh, okay.
Happened this morning, I think. I was looking
This
through
morning.
I was looking
Already.
I was looking through Reddit, and there's a subreddit about debating a vegan. And there was a non-vegan saying, well, this subreddit isn't worth much because every time you try to debate vegans on the debate of a vegan subreddit, you get downvoted to extremes, to the point that if you even comment, then your comment is considered a spam. And I thought, yeah, that's very, extreme. Why do you feel the need to downvote even opinions that you don't find tasteful? I mean, how is that interesting? How is that, compelling people to adopt veganism? Like, if they see that kind of behavior. And I know that there are lots of bad faith actors who come in that subreddit with the wish to, got you, vegan. I or trolling vegans. But I think we should still enter those debates with good faith, and not with the "I'm here to own you" kind of attitude. Like most street activists do. Like, vegan street activists are not there to win debates. They're there to win people to the cause of veganism, and there's a real difference there.
Oh God. I get what you're talking about. Like people kind of, like they'll put like the clickbait title, like, oh, vegan gets owned, or, I had to school this vegan and no. Like people, yes, that, I mean, to be fair, it's on both sides. Like, I guess vegans do that too. But so do other people. Like, but so yeah, that I would consider like a extremist toxic behavior. Yes.
I think that if you're thinking this much about vegans, it's a good sign, even if you're thinking about them negatively.
Well, remember how last time I was talking about that article about like there was that study about how like people are actually kind of jealous
Yes.
of vegan? No, is something about like jealous people across the board is that they're actually kind of like obsessed with you and they're like your fan, right? Like, have you ever thought
True.
about that?
Yes,
Right. I mean, there's even a category and like hashtag of anti-vegan. Like they are paying that much of attention to us, giving us that much time and energy. Right. Because like people who, right, genuinely do not care about someone or something aren't, putting time and energy into it. Like they act like it doesn't exist. Like if it truly doesn't bother them, it doesn't like exist to them. So the fact that people are like constantly giving all this like energy into it, I think, yeah, you're kind of jealous.
Yes, I completely agree. I heard that somewhere online that the anti-fans are really the real fans that,
Exactly.
Yes.
Right. Jealous people are actually kind of like obsessed with you and become your fan.
I think there's something about, how love is near hate, or something like that.
That's definitely a point too.
I mean, indifference is the worst that you
Exact,
could get
yes.
from someone. Just, cold indifference to your cause, to what you're talking about. So if people are at least angry about what you're saying, then in a way, they're still engaged with that. Okay, one last point. Potential harm to traditional farming communities and the agricultural economy.
Potential harm, the like ruining just like small farms and homesteads. I'm gonna
Yes.
call BS on that one. Like, how is it right? Just get rid of the animal part. You're like growing crops is pretty old and traditional. I mean, agriculture was invented, what, like, thousands of years ago, literally.
Reminds
So yeah,
me.
I'm calling BS on that one. And there's actually this one account I follow on Instagram, Ranchers Advocacy Program. Jeez, I can't talk today.
Advocacy.
Yes, thank you. Right, so they actually like they're this program that actually helped farmers transition into, just plant-based. So I don't know. I'm calling BS on it. If anything, it's like, well, I don't know. Well, right, like you have animals and then you have crops, but then you get rid of the animals. I guess you're either spending less time and energy or you just have more time and energy for the crops. And then what is the statistic? I believe it's something like vegans only take what, like a 16th of an acre per year, is where a meat eater I think is like a acre and a half something. So as vegans, we're actually taking up far less land space than, we would with animal agriculture, which is why it's such a huge problem in the first place for the environment.
But then, how would you talk to someone who is a farmer? Like, I remember I had a friend who owned, well, her family owned a dairy farm. And I actually visited that farm once. And when I became vegan, she took it very personally. Like, she told me, point blank, you're threatening the company of my parents, of my family, that what, the money that put food on the table, that, sustained me, paid for my studies, all of that, and you're saying that what my family is doing is wrong and evil. How can we be friends? When you take that position, and so how would you respond to that?
Tough luck. I'm sorry, but there's just so many ways to make money. And I know I sound like a broken record, but I feel like so many problems really are just based on the fact that everything is always about money. Yeah, sorry, tough luck. What you're doing is wrong. You can make money other ways. Yeah, I know that's me getting spicy for the day. Tough luck.
Well, I don't remember what I told her, but it feels like she tied her identity to their economic activity. Like, I'm the farmer, and I have my place in society because I feed people, and that's a good thing. That's how I contribute to society. Like, that gave her lots of pride and, a sense of, self-respect.
I mean, I get it to an extent, but then again, you can still feed people and make money with just by growing plants. Like, sorry, tough luck.
And there are plenty of farmers out there who made that choice, who were in her position and saw the light and decided to
Exactly. Like, Right. Like I was saying earlier, the ranchers advocacy program, like there's programs like that. And, it's not like we're these evil people just, cutting them off and like taking the rug under their feet. I feel like they have that kind of victim complex. It's like, no, we're just asking you to grow crops and get rid of the animals. Like,
Yeah, like you're not the victim. The animals are in this story.
exactly. I know that's the hill I'm dying on, just like tough luck.
Yes, I understand that. I have nothing to say against that. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Rebecca, for having taken the time to talk with me and have this conversation. I had lots of fun talking about those those points and yeah, thank you so much.
All right, well. Thanks for actually like reaching me out again to me, because like sometimes I feel like there was someone who was like, oh, sorry, I have technical difficulties, and then they like never got back to me. And I feel like that was just like their polite way of me not wanting to like be on their podcast or whatever. But
Listen, the worst that happened to me in this space is one big vegan podcaster. I invited them on the show and they said yes. And we decided on a time. I freed an afternoon for that and I prepared questions, I researched and all of that. And that person never came to,
oh, they just di
they ghosted me. They ghosted me. They never
just straight
responded.
up ghosted you. That's awful.
Oh, I used to listen to that podcast, but I can't. No, now I just can't
You're
because
like
I.
you know they're like a little asshole,
Yes,
and
they're
it
horrible.
kind of like ruins it for you.
Exactly. Like, no, thank you. I don't want that. I don't want to remember that time every time I listen to the podcast. Sorry.
Trauma. I swear there is such thing as podcast trauma.
So, no, I would never, inflict that on somebody else. Of course not. So thank you again, Rebecca, and yes.
Right, well, thanks for having me on again.
Thank you everyone for listening. I kindly invite you to share this podcast with the vegans you know. Let's encourage more people to take action. Again, thank you so much for caring, and I will see you next Tuesday for a new episode.